Chapter 6. Snitchy and Cracks had a snug little office on the old battleground, where they drove a snug little business, and fought a great many small pitched battles for a great many contending parties. Though it could hardly be said of these conflicts that they were running fights, for in truth they generally proceeded at a snail's pace the part the firm had in them came so far within the general denomination, that now they took a shot at this plaintiff, and now aimed a chop at that defendant, now made a heavy charge at an estate in Chancery, and now at some light skirmishing among an irregular body of small debtors, just as the occasion served, and the enemy happened to present himself. The Gazette was an important and profitable feature in some of their fields, as in fields of greater renown, and in most of the actions wherein they showed their generalship, it was afterwards observed by the combatants that they had had great difficulty in making each other out, or in knowing with any degree of distinctness what they were about, in consequence of the vast amount of smoke by which they were surrounded. The offices of Messrs. Snitchy and Cracks stood convenient, with an open door down two smooth steps, in the marketplace, so that any angry farmer inclining towards hot water might tumble into it at once. Their special council chamber and hall of conference was an old back room upstairs, with a low dark ceiling, which seemed to be knitting its brows gloomily in the consideration of tangled points of law. It was furnished with some high-backed leathern chairs, garnished with great goggle-eyed brass nails, of which, every here and there, two or three had fallen out, or had been picked out, perhaps, by the wandering thumbs and forefingers of bewildered clients. There was a framed print of a great judge in it, every curl in whose dreadful wig had made a man's hair stand on end. Bales of papers filled the moldy closets, shelves, and tables, and round the wainscot there were tiers of boxes, padlocked and fireproof, with people's names painted outside, which anxious visitors felt themselves, by a cruel enchantment, obliged to spell backwards and forwards, and to make anagrams of, while they sat, seeming to listen to Snitchy and Cracks, without comprehending one word of what they said. Snitchy and Cracks had each, in private life as in professional existence, a partner of his own. Snitchy and Cracks were the best friends in the world, and had a real confidence in one another, but Mrs. Snitchy, by a dispensation not uncommon in the affairs of life, was on principle suspicious of Mr. Cracks, and Mrs. Cracks was on principle suspicious of Mr. Snitchy. Here Snitchy's indeed, apostrophe the latter lady would observe, sometimes, to Mr. Cracks, using that imaginative plural, as if in disparagement of an objectionable pair of pantaloons, or other articles not possessed of a singular number. I don't see what you want with your Snitchy's, for my part. You trust a great deal too much to your Snitchy's, I think, and I hope you may never find my words come true. Apostrophe while Mrs. Snitchy would observe to Mr. Snitchy, of Cracks, that if ever he was led away by man he was led away by that man, and that if ever she read a double purpose in a mortal eye, she read that purpose in Cracks' eye. Apostrophe notwithstanding this, however, they were all very good friends in general, and Mrs. Snitchy and Mrs. Cracks maintained a close bond of alliance against the office, apostrophe which they both considered the Blue Chamber, uncommon enemy, full of dangerous, because unknown, machinations. In this office, nevertheless, Snitchy and Cracks made honey for their several hives. Here, sometimes, they would linger, of a fine evening, at the window of their council chamber overlooking the old battleground, and wonder, but that was generally at assize time, when much business had made them sentimental, at the folly of mankind, who couldn't always be at peace with one another, and go to law comfortably. Here, days, and weeks, and months, and years, passed over them. Their calendar, the gradually diminishing number of brass nails in the leathern chairs, and the increasing bulk of papers on the tables. here, nearly 3 years' flight had thinned the one, and swelled the other, since the breakfast in the orchard, when they sat together in consultation at night. Not alone, but, with a man of about 30, or that time of life, negligently dressed, and somewhat haggard in the face, but well made, well attired, and well looking, who sat in the armchair of state, with one hand in his breast, and the other in his disheveled hair, pondering moodily. Messrs. Snitchey and Crack sat opposite each other at a neighboring desk. One of the fireproof boxes, unpadlocked and opened, was upon it. A part of its contents lay strewn upon the table, and the rest was then in course of passing through the hands of Mr. Snitchey, who brought it to the candle, document by document, looked at every paper singly as he produced it, shook his head, and handed it to Mr. Cracks, who looked it over also, shook his head, and laid it down. Sometimes, they would stop, and shaking their heads in concert, look towards the abstracted client. And the name on the box, being Michael Warden Esquire, we may conclude from these premises, that the name and the box were both his, and that the affairs of Michael Warden Esquire, were in a bad way. That's all, apostrophe said Mr. Snitchey, turning up the last paper. Really there's no other resource. No other resource. Apostrophe, all lost, spent, wasted, pawned, borrowed, and sold, eh? Apostrophe, said the client, looking up. All, apostrophe, returned Mr. Snitchey. Nothing else to be done, you say? Apostrophe, nothing at all. Apostrophe, the client bit his nails, and pondered again. And I am not even personally safe in England? You hold to that, do you? Apostrophe, in no part of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, apostrophe, replied Mr. Snitchey. A mere prodigal son with no father to go back to, no swine to keep, and no husks to share with them? Eh? Apostrophe pursued the client, rocking one leg over the other, and searching the ground with his eyes. Mr. Snitchey coughed, as if to deprecate the being supposed to participate in any figurative illustration of a legal position. Mr. Cracks, as if to express that it was a partnership view of the subject, also coughed. Ruined at 30. Apostrophe, said the client. Humph. Apostrophe, not ruined, Mr. Warden, apostrophe, returned Snitchey. Not so bad as that. You have done a good deal towards it, I must say, but you are not ruined. A little nursing, apostrophe, a little devil, apostrophe, said the client. Apostrophe, Mr. Cracks, apostrophe, said Snitchey, will you oblige me with a pinch of snuff? Thank you, sir. Apostrophe, as the imperturbable lawyer applied it to his nose with great apparent relish, and a perfect absorption of his attention in the proceeding, the client gradually broke into a smile, and, looking up, said, "You talk of nursing. How long nursing? Apostrophe, how long nursing? Apostrophe, repeated Snitchey, dusting the snuff from his fingers, and making a slow calculation in his mind. For your involved estate, sir? In good hands? S&CS, say? 6 or 7 years. Apostrophe, to starve for 6 or 7 years. Apostrophe, said the client with a fretful laugh, and an impatient change of his position. To starve for 6 or 7 years, Mr. Warden, apostrophe, said Snitchey, would be very uncommon indeed. You might get another estate by showing yourself the while. But, we don't think you could do it, speaking for self and Cracks, and consequently don't advise it. Apostrophe, what do you advise? Apostrophe, nursing, I say, apostrophe, repeated Snitchey. Some few years of nursing by self and Cracks would bring it round. But to enable us to make terms, and hold terms, and you to keep terms, you must go away, you must live abroad. As to starvation, we could insure you some hundreds a year to starve upon, even in the beginning, I dare say, Mr. Warden. "Hundreds," apostrophe said the client. "And I have spent thousands." "That," retorted Mr. Snitchy, putting the paper slowly back into the cast iron box. "There is no doubt about. No doubt about," he repeated to himself, as he thoughtfully pursued his occupation. The lawyer very likely knew his man. At any rate, his dry, shrewd, whimsical manner had a favorable influence on the client's moody state, and disposed him to be more free and unreserved. Or, perhaps the client knew his man, and had elicited such encouragement as he had received, to render some purpose he was about to disclose the more defensible in appearance. Gradually raising his head, he sat looking at his immovable adviser with a smile, which presently broke into a laugh. "After all," he said, "my iron-headed friend," Mr. Snitchy pointed out his partner. "Self and excuse me, Cracks." "I beg Mr. Cracks' pardon," said the client. "After all, my iron-headed friends," he leaned forward in his chair, and dropped his voice a little, "you don't know half my ruin yet." Mr. Snitchy stopped and stared at him. Mr. Cracks also stared. "I am not only deep in debt," said the client, "but I am deep in, not in love." Cried Snitchy. "Yes," said the client, falling back in his chair, and surveying the firm with his hands in his pockets. "Deep in love. And not with an heiress, sir?" said Snitchy. "Not with an heiress. Nor a rich lady? Nor a rich lady, that I know of except in beauty and merit. A single lady, I trust?" Said Mr. Snitchy, with great expression. "Certainly." "It's not one of Dr. Jeddler's daughters?" Said Snitchy, suddenly squaring his elbows on his knees, and advancing his face at least a yard. "Yes." Returned the client. "Not his younger daughter?" Said Snitchy. "Yes." Returned the client. Mr. Cracks, said Snitchy, much relieved. "Will you oblige me with another pinch of snuff?" "Thank you. I am happy to say it don't signify, Mr. Warden. She's engaged, sir, she's bespoke. My partner can corroborate me. We know the fact." "We know the fact," repeated Cracks. "Why, so do I perhaps," returned the client quietly. "What of that? Are you men of the world, and did you never hear of a woman changing her mind?" "There certainly have been actions for breach," said Mr. Snitchy, "brought against both spinsters and widows, but, in the majority of cases," interposed the client, impatiently. "Don't talk to me of cases. The general precedent is in a much larger volume than any of your law books. Besides, do you think I have lived 6 weeks in the doctor's house for nothing?" "I think, sir," observed Mr. Snitchy, gravely addressing himself to his partner, "that of all the scrapes Mr. Warden's horses have brought him into at one time and another, and they have been pretty numerous, and pretty expensive, as none know better than himself, and you, and I, the worst scrape may turn out to be, if he talks in this way, this having ever been left by one of them at the doctor's garden wall, with 3 broken ribs, a snapped collarbone, and the Lord knows how many bruises. We didn't think so much of it, at the time when we knew he was going on well under the doctor's hands and roof. But it looks bad now, sir." "Bad?" "It looks very bad. Dr. Jeddler to our client, Mr. Cracks. Mr. Alfred Heathfield to a sort of client, Mr. Snitchy," said Cracks. apostrophe Mr. Michael Warden to a kind of client, apostrophe said the careless visitor, and no bad one either, having played the fool for 10 or 12 years. However, Mr. Michael Warden has sown his wild oats, now there's their crop, in that box, and he means to repent and be wise. And in proof of it, Mr. Michael Warden means, if he can, to marry Marion, the doctor's lovely daughter, and to carry her away with him. Apostrophe, really, Mr. Cracks, apostrophe Snitchy began. Really, Mr. Snitchy, and Mr. Cracks, partners both, apostrophe said the client, interrupting him, you know your duty to your clients, and you know well enough, I am sure, that it is no part of it to interfere in a mere love affair, which I am obliged to confide to you. I am not going to carry the young lady off without her own consent. There's nothing illegal in it. I never was Mr. Heathfield's bosom friend. I violate no confidence of his. I love where he loves, and I mean to win where he would win, if I can. Apostrophe, he can't, Mr. Cracks, apostrophe said Snitchy, evidently anxious and discomfited. He can't do it, sir. She dotes on Mr. Alfred. Apostrophe, does she? Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the client. Apostrophe, Mr. Cracks, she dotes on him, sir, apostrophe, persisted Snitchy. I didn't live 6 weeks, some few months ago, in the doctor's house for nothing, and I doubted that soon, apostrophe observed the client. She would have doted on him, if her sister could have brought it about, but I watched them. Marion avoided his name, avoided the subject. Shrunk from the least allusion to it, with evident distress. Apostrophe, why should she, Mr. Cracks, you know? Why should she, sir? Apostrophe inquired Snitchy. I don't know why she should, though there are many likely reasons, apostrophe said the client, smiling at the attention and perplexity expressed in Mr. Snitchy's shining eye, and at his cautious way of carrying on the conversation, and making himself informed upon the subject. But I know she does. She was very young when she made the engagement, if it may be called one, I am not even sure of that, and has repented of it, perhaps. Perhaps it seems a foppish thing to say, but upon my soul I don't mean it in that light. She may have fallen in love with me, as I have fallen in love with her. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.